guess it was true all along.
Charlie Clark, he of Astrid and the Reindeer Section fame, and his brand new musical project Yamarama, or Yamarama, whichever it is, I don't know. That's the latest, well, the first single, I believe, to be taken. Some Days is the name of that. Big fan of Charlie Clark's work, big fan of Astrid. It was good when they came back. Sadly, Charlie's not on Twitter, so I won't be tweeting about that, but if you're on Threads, he's on there if you want to follow him, and on other things such as Instagram. Then, Last Night by The Strokes from the album Is This It? That was released as a single back in 2001, getting to number 14 in the UK charts. And then Sam Schirdle and Somebody Else first played that a few weeks ago. Latest track from his debut EP, which is called The Circus, and comes out later this year. Dates have been announced. No London dates that I'm aware of yet. Playing Brighton later this month for anyone that might be interested in travelling down there.
you know your life itself. Like the leaf clings to the tree. Oh, my darling, cling to me. For we're like creatures of the wind, wild as the wind, wild as the wind.
There with David Bowie and Wild is the Wind, taken from his Station to Station album that was released back in 1976. Not released as a single to my knowledge in the UK, but a classic track, played live many times. He played it at Glastonbury, I seem to remember. He might have played it when I got to see him. I was one of the lucky ones that did definitely get to see him. Got to see him at Wembley, and I think one of his last major tours. Right, interview time. I will, as I said, I've got author Tim Levin coming in, or I did speak to him earlier, earlier last week, or was it earlier in the week? I don't even remember anymore. I'm just going to shut up, play his songs, and let the man talk.
I got me a shovel, and I'm digging a ditch. She drew a line across the middle of my broken heart.
It's just a knot in the small of your back. You could work it out with your fingers. It's just a tune that got stuck in your head. You could work it out with your fingers. It's just some numbers tangled up in your thumbs. You could work it out with your fingers. It's just a simple problem missing from the person you miss. A reminder you could always be a little bit better than that. So try and get better and don't ever accept less. Take a plain black marker and write this on your chest.
You just heard Get Better by Frank Turner, and there's a reason I played that, and we will talk to that. I'm now joined by best-selling author and, yeah, and lots of other things, and we'll talk to that. Tim Lebham, hello, sir. How are we?
Hey, Gareth. I'm great. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. I mean, I've been, sort of just before we came on air, I was sort of saying that I've been sort of stalking you for quite a while now. And it's over 2 decades I've now been, wow, sort of following your work. And it's actually probably longer than that. But this particular chat came about because when I interviewed Frank Turner a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to him about a book that yourself and Christopher Golden put out called 10 Word Tragedies, which was based on a Frank Turner song. So I thought, well, I know from following you for years that you've got a love of music, but I thought it'd be really interesting to get your side of, you know, how did you contact Frank, and where did that come from, 10 Word Tragedies?
Well, that's one of those dream moments of your career, really. I got into Frank, so the song you just played, Get Better, that's the album I really got into Frank, Positive Songs for Negative People.
Yeah.
And he struck me as he's one of my favorite songwriters, if not the favorite. And when I sort of got Chris Golden into the music a little, and when we heard Mittens, there's a certain lyric in Mittens that we thought if that's a true story, that would be a great 10 Word Tragedies. What a great title for an anthology. We'd both been in touch with Frank previously. Chris had met him and I dropped him an email now and then. He always replies to his emails. I don't know where he gets his time from.
Yeah.
Some sort of time portal in his office. So I just dropped him a line. I can't remember who emailed him. It might have been Chris, might have been me, just saying, we'd love to edit an anthology based on this lyric. What do you think? And Frank was like, yeah, do it. Sounds cool. So I said, have you really got that box of postcards? He said, yeah. So he sent me this box of postcards he bought from New York. Yeah. And I think Frank said last week, we sort of sent a few postcards to a select list of writers and asked them to use one of the postcards as inspiration for a short story.
Okay.
And we sort of half bullied Frank into writing a story for us.
Yeah.
Which was fantastic. There was that moment. I mean, he's a genius songwriter. And when he said he'd write for us, there was that moment we thought, I hope it's good. Luckily it was. It was fantastic. The best thing about the whole experience was, just before the book came out, Chris and I were chatting about it and we were saying, how cool would it be if we could have a launch party and Frank might play there? And it was like, it's never going to happen. So we emailed him. He said, yeah, sure, as long as it's close. So I became a concert promoter for a few short, very stressful, interesting weeks. We did a launch party with PS Publishing at the Lexington Pub in London.
I know it well, yeah.
Yeah, do you? Right, yeah. Pretty famous music venue, close to where Frank lives. He came along, a guitar in one hand, amp in the other hand, and he did a full, I mean, they got the sound system there. He did a 12-song set for us and launched the book, and it was just dreamy. It was fantastic.
That sounds amazing, yeah.
He did a song dedicated to my daughter who was there, who cried all the way through it. So he's a good dude.
Yeah. I touched on all of the stuff that he does for others. He's quite unique in the music industry, I think it's fair to say. We touched on that you did this with Chris Golden. I mean, you've got quite the history with Chris. How did that all come about as well? I find that quite interesting because you've written quite a few books together and things. So
yeah, I think eight novels now and a various couple of screenplays and short stories. So Chris, we were aware of each other. Chris emailed me to ask me to write a short story for a Hellboy anthology he was editing. Probably, okay. I guess about 10 years ago. It must be 10 years ago now. And I'd never really read Hellboy. So I said, no, I can't do it. And he emailed me back and said, no, you're going to do it. He sort of bullied me into it. So I read all the Hellboy comics and loved them and wrote a short story and he loved it. We actually met for the first time in New York on we tell the story. It was a romantic moonlit night. we were at a horror convention. We met on this, room balcony outside the room and just started chatting about the story. Really hit it off. He sort of commissioned the Hellboy novel from me there and then. And we just became firm friends. And pretty soon after that, we collaborated on Mind the Gap, which is the first novel we did together. And it just went on from there. And we still, we're collaborating at the moment on a series of comics called Mortal Terror. So we'll always have something going in the background now. We've holidayed together, our families. And Chris is sort of the fiction writing version of Frank in that he helps everyone. I probably wouldn't be writing, as a professional now still, if it weren't for Chris and if it weren't for my agent, Howard, the two people who are probably most responsible for me still being a writer. He's just, you know, he helps out younger writers and he blurbs people and he's just he's a really decent, good human being.
Okay.
So why wouldn't I want to write novels?
Yeah, with? Exactly. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I mean, that sounds like the perfect person to be writing novels with. Thank you. I said you're a big fan of music. How much, if at all, does music play a part in your writing process?
Sometimes, like physically, when I'm actually writing, sometimes I listen to music. Most of the time I listen to music, sometimes I don't. It depends on what I'm writing and what I'm working on. I won't often, like Pearl Jam have got a new album out at the moment.
Yeah.
I can't sit and listen to a new Pearl Jam album while I'm writing because I want to listen to the music and absorb it, you know? So most of the time when I'm writing, I listen to stuff that I've known for decades, like Thin Lizzy or Motorhead. And it's almost background. I'm not really following the lyrics. But then a lot of stuff I listen to outside when I'm not writing does sort of feed my imagination, I guess, and sometimes feeds into what I'm working on. But as a tool for writing, it's mostly just stuff that I'm very familiar with.
Yeah,
that I don't have to really concentrate on. Sometimes film soundtracks and stuff like that. But if it's going to be a bit of rock and roll or a bit of punk, it's stuff I know really well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, I fully get it. If I'm reading on the train or something like that, the music is there to almost block out the world.
Right.
But I'm not concentrating on it. I'm concentrating on what I'm doing. So I get that.
I'm not very good in total silence. I know a lot of writers, quite a few writers, just write in silence. I'm not great at that. So just lately, I've even listened to a bit of ambient stuff. Moby, you know?
Yeah.
A bit of ambient stuff that he's done. A real mix, really.
Yeah, okay. Latest novel, Among the Living, that came out in paperback earlier this year. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, it's Among the Living is the third in a really, really, really loose climate change thriller trilogy that I've written. The first was Eden a few years ago, and then the Last Storm. And they're only linked in theme, linked in that they're set in a world where the climate disaster has, you know, moved on apace and we're in real trouble. There are Easter eggs, I suppose, in Among the Living, suggesting that they're set in the same world, but there's no link other than that. There's no character links or anything. So Among the Living is, it's set in far north of Canada, where the permafrost is melting due to climate change, and it releases a pathogen that could be very dangerous to humanity. And it follows two groups of people, two characters really, but each with their own group of friends. One group is climate activists, and the other group are they're digging around looking for rare earth minerals to make money. And in doing so, they uncover something that turns out to be a sort of intelligent virus, which is pretty terrifying, really, a virus that whose main reason is to infect and perpetrate its infection. So it sort of f- focuses on these two estranged friends who have to come together again to try and prevent this virus from spreading around the globe.
Okay. And that's now available. As I said, it's in paperback, it's in electronic form, and from all good bookstores, if people were.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay.
All your books on the way as well. So.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. We're going to play another song now that you've chosen. So you've chosen four songs. You did choose five, but I think for time we're going to do four. So
right.
The next song we're going to play, it's another one that actually features Frank Turner, but this is the Lottery Winners and Letter to Myself.
Dear self, I know you're crying out for help, so I thought I'd write this letter. What are you now, like 12? I know it seems like the pressure's stuck on high, but I've come from the future to tell you it's fine. You need to worry less about how you are perceived and focus a bit more on the things that you believe. Because I know it seems like now you don't have your place, but it will all fit together. Trust me, it's the case. So get out there and do all the things you love, and don't you dare sacrifice them just to look good. Oh, read some of those books sitting on the shelf, drinking that knowledge. This is a letter to myself.
I know it's a long, long way to go. When you're at the start, before you know, you're halfway down the road. And everything seems smaller. Everything seems smaller. Everything seems smaller.
On your parents, they don't know what they're doing. Actually, they're still growing up, mate. They're only human. Your teens and your 20s will fly by in a flash. So cherish every moment, embrace every laugh. You're gonna find films and the songs of the Smiths, and in that whole universe for you to exist, it's gonna teach you that others feel the same way. They're gonna be your friends. They're still your friends today. All your greatest days are still yet to come. There will be heartbreak, but there'll be so much love. And that girl from school, you think there's no one better, she's not the one for you, mate. Just forget her.
I know it's a long, long way to go. When you're at the start, but before you know, you're halfway down the road. And everything seems smaller. Everything seems smaller. Everything seems smaller.
To tell you which way to go, that's a decision you've got to make on your own. And you're gonna make mistakes, but from each you will learn. For every wrong turn is experience earned. And trust me, it's a journey, it's happening now. And you're gonna do so many things that make you proud. Don't get me wrong, it's not all plain sailing. There's times you're in front and times that you're failing. The world is so much bigger than the one at school. And if you saw me now, you'd probably think I was cool. So work hard and leave nothing to luck. Every time you fall, you will get up. Don't rush, take some time to be a kid, and don't beat yourself up for stupid stuff you did. Trust me, I know exactly what you're going through. Love yourself. Yours sincerely, you.
There's a long, long way to go. When you're at the start, before you know, everything seems smaller. Everything seems smaller. Everything seems smaller. Everything seems smaller.
You released your first novel, Mesmer, back in 1997. You're in your fourth decade as a published author. I mean, what advice, linking to the song, what advice would you send back to yourself when you were starting out?
Blimey, the fourth decade thing terrifies me a little bit. I hadn't thought of it like that.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I mean, I'm sort of aware that the anniversary of Mesmer is in 3 years, so I should probably do something for that. What advice would I give to myself? Well, something I've always done is embrace rejection. I still get stuff rejected all the time now.
Okay, really?
I always say to people that it's sort of a vital part of the process. I did a talk at Abergavenny Writing Festival last week, and somebody asked about rejection. I said sometimes a good rejection is better than a casual acceptance. You know, yeah. If you get a good rejection letter and they'll tell you why they rejected your story, it can be really valuable to you as a writer to better your craft. So advice to myself would just be persist and keep writing, and, you know, write from your soul and write for yourself.
Yeah.
Obviously, that sounds pretty glib and very arty, but I balance, being a full-time writer, I have to balance the art and the commerce. So writing for myself is something I always try to do.
Yeah.
But always at the back of my head, there's this idea of where I'm going to sell this or who is it for.
Yeah.
Sometimes I write novels to commission. So I know where they're going to go. I know which publisher is going to be publishing them. So that's always sort of at the back of my mind when I'm working on something. But the ideal is just writing something you love and something you'd love to read.
Yeah, I suppose that. Yeah, if you're writing something that you would read yourself, that's got to be the ultimate. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And it's a wonderful part of storytelling for me. When I'm writing something I'm really excited about, I speed up towards the end because I want to know what happens. Speed up in the writing process. Because often I don't really know exactly what's happening at the end.
So you're not one of the... I've read how to write books and things. I mean, I'm a huge bookworm, but you know, that you must plan the start, the middle, and the end, and you know, and that.
Well, I usually have a rough idea. There's a pantser v plotter.
So yeah,
pantser is somebody who writes by the seat of their pants. Plotter is somebody who plots in great detail. I think I've always thought if you plot a novel in great detail, you've told a story almost to yourself.
Yeah.
So the sort of vitality and the excitement of revealing and discovering the story is sort of gone in a way. I have got myself into horrible corners, you know, written myself into terrible corners doing that. But sometimes doing that, writing yourself into a corner, you find a way of making the story unusual, and readers will not expect what you've done. So it's not always a disaster when you're stuck halfway through and you think, oh, hell, where am I going from now? So I always have a rough idea of what's going to happen. And usually, I mean, I've just written a novel proposal just last week or the week before. It's 3 pages long. And if I get the go-ahead to write that novel, it's on a 3-page proposal.
Yeah.
Which I'll then probably put in a drawer and then forget about and just go and write the novel I want to write. But as I'm going along, I'll have, like at the end of a chapter, I'll have ideas for the following 2 chapters, and I'll keep jotting down ideas for what might happen later in the book. So it's almost like putting a 3D jigsaw puzzle together, really. And then when you get to the end, you go back and make sure all the bits fit properly.
Yeah, it looks the way it's meant to look. Oh,
yeah, yeah.
That's fascinating. I'd never even thought about that sort of approach, but yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So we've said that you've been doing this a little while now, and you've written fantasy, horror, sci-fi, thrillers. For someone that's coming to the world, sort of your world for the first time, I mean, where would you normally point people to start? I suppose, again, it depends on what genre, but I mean, is there one book that you would say, yeah, read that one first?
I think I'd probably go for The Silence, because, I mean, it's undoubtedly my most successful book, because it was made into a movie, and it sold around the world because of that.
Yeah.
Even before the movie, it was probably my most popular book. So I point people there because it contains, I mean, it's apocalyptic horror. I've written a lot of, I've destroyed the world a lot of times. So I'm trying to ease that now. So it's sort of apocalyptic horror, but it's also very family driven. It's family centric. It's about family in peril, which is what people say, what scares you. And I always say my family in danger, or unfair things happening to my family. And so The Silence is the sort of definitive version of that, really. It all centers on a family imperiled by creatures that hunt by sound. They're flying. Yeah. Flying. They're almost like large versions of viruses that fly around, just homing in on any sound and wiping out humanity. I know it sounds quite familiar. There was a film out at the same time which had the sort of similar theme, but my novel was published first, just say that.
Yeah, indeed.
So I do think I'd probably point people to The Silence.
Yeah, okay.
It sort of sets out a lot of the themes that I write about.
Thank you. We're going going to go actually straight on to another song. You've picked the Amazing Skunk and Anansie. What is it about them and why this particular song?
I've loved Skunk and Anansie since I was a kid. I've always been into rock music. They always sound almost, you almost can't categorize Skunk and Anansie. I don't think there's a certain amount of punk in there. And there's certainly punk attitude showing through in all their songs. You know, a lot of it's rock and roll. They've written love songs. But Hedonism is just about, have fun, but don't hurt other people, really. I guess that's the message that comes from the song. It's a decent message, you know.
Yeah, well, we could do with more people living by that, really, couldn't we, with that standard of doubt?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is Skunk and Anansie and Hedonism. For many people, that's the opposite of hedonism. I'm going to tell you a story about me, which is, to do this, I have to have some ego, so I'll make this about me for a bit. Back in 2019, we're a similar age, you and I, back in 2019, I made the decision to do what I consider one of the most stupid things I've done, and sign up for the London Marathon. I was kind of conned into it by one of my little sisters, who, my son had just done it, and my little sister, I was in the pub afterwards, my little sister said, well, if you put your name down for 2019, then I'll put my name down, and my other little sister said the same. neither of those got in. I got two offered two charity places, and I got in the ballot. So I thought, well, it's meant to be. So, but 2 weeks after I got offered my place with the first charity, I broke my ankle at Glastonbury.
Oh no!
Never, I've not done that before. So deferred.
Was that a mosh pit injury?
No, it was. I managed to find a bit of mud at Glastonbury. I mean, yeah, and that that was in a dry year. So. And the specialist said to me, whatever I think you'll be too weak to do it. But I said, no, I'm going to be stubborn and I'm going to do this. So I defer, and then I broke my other ankle.
Oh, no.
It's like the universe was trying to tell me something. But then COVID came along. And then, so at the age of 49, I ran my first and last marathon. I look back and think, I'm glad I've done it. And I've run half marathons and 10Ks since then, but I will never ever run a half marathon. But I thought I was mad doing that. Now, I'm not questioning your sanity here, but you've taken fitness. I mean, you've written a book about it. You've taken it to another level, haven't you?
My quick story is that when I was 41, I was unfit and overweight, and I sort of looked at myself and thought, I might as well give up now. And then very soon after that, and it was a real down moment, I thought, early 40s, I'm never going to be fit. And then I bumped into a friend, and I hadn't seen him only for several months, and he was a changed person, lost weight, he looked well and, you know, great. I said, what happened to you? And he said, I got fit. And that really planted a seed in me. And at that same evening when I saw him, it was on we were watching our boys play rugby, so it was wet and muddy and horrible.
Yeah.
I said to him, I always thought I could only get fit if I had a target, something to aim for.
Yeah.
And he said, we should do the National Three Peaks in 6 months time. So that evening I said to my wife, I'm doing the National Three Peaks, and just started training for it and found a real love of it. I've always loved the outdoors, but I found a real love of training in the outdoors for that, you know, trail running and mountain walking.
Yeah.
So we did the Three Peaks. I started running and then bought a bike and started swimming, started doing triathlon, and then moved up from sprint triathlon to half Ironmans to Ironman. And I've a few marathons peppered in there here and there, and half marathons and stuff. And I always say I've got friends who run 5K twice a week to keep fit. I just went a bit extreme, and I keep trying to push myself.
Yeah.
Otherwise I worry I'll stop if I don't keep pushing myself. I'm doing an Ironman this year. I did it last year. It's called the Brutal.
Yes. No, I read the blog about that and everything.
Race called the Brutal. You know what you're going to get. And my daughter said something a couple of years to me, which still rings. And she says, Ellie, she said, thing is, Dad, you haven't found your limits yet. And that's still, and I'm 55 this year, and I'm wondering what to do to find my limits. They do a double Brutal, which is a double Ironman distance, but I'm not really up for that. I don't think that would be my limit.
Yeah, I was reading that story about the American 24-hour race, I think it is, or something. That mind-blowing. And I think a lot of the people that are doing that are in their 40s and 50s, and it's people that have, it's a lifestyle choice for them. But it's quite fascinating. I'm in awe of you, as I said. I vowed never again after I did the marathon. But
when I did my first Ironman, I was saying to people, I'm doing my one and only Ironman, and I've done a few now, and you either do one or you just keep going. Do one, you think, right, that's that box ticked. And I love, like I said, I always knew I'd have to find something to do that I loved to get fit. And I tried the gym all through my 20s and 30s. Let's join a gym and get fit. But you don't join a gym, and then you go a few times, and then they have your year's membership, and you don't go for 9 months. But finding, I'm going for a quick bike ride this evening. It's just an hour out on the bike in the countryside. It's beautiful. And it's good. It's good for the soul. It's good for the mental health. I mean, if I go 3 or 4 days without doing a bit of exercise, I'm climbing the walls. And I sit behind a desk most of the day.
Yeah, I suppose that. Yeah.
Well, there's that as well. That. So it's, yeah.
No, I mean, I run when I'm training for something, but Yeah. We have dogs, and so I'm out in East London, but we're lucky enough that we're surrounded by country parks and things.
Oh, lovely.
So, and we've got a park with loads of massive redwood trees and everything. So, yeah, every weekend it's many hours spent out in, and as you say, for the benefits for your mental health of just being out there away from everything, and
green therapy. I mean, a doctor should prescribe it, you know, yeah. Getting out into the greenery. It's,
yeah. Agree completely. Do you listen to music while you're running?
No, never. Yeah. I say never. Not since. So when I started getting fit in my early 40s, ever since then, no. I went through a phase in my sort of mid 30s of training for a half marathon, and then I got injured and just stopped for years. And then I did, but no, I really don't. Because I like being out in nature, and I like the sort of sometimes the solitude.
Yeah, okay.
Other times just the sounds of nature. On the bike, obviously, you can't.
You need to be able to hear what's coming. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And when you're in a race, you know, I usually train for races. You're not allowed, you can't wear music, you can't listen to music during races because it's dangerous. You need to be aware of what's going on around you.
Yeah.
So, no, I never do.
No, I don't either. I listen to podcasts when I'm training.
Right.
Mainly about craft beer, actually, which I think is it's the prize at the end of the run.
At the end of the run, always a good one, yeah.
You mentioned The Silence being turned into a film with Stanley Tucci. Nicolas Cage has been in another film based on all your stories.
Yeah.
Is there a story that you're thinking, this should be a film, this needs to happen, and if so, who would star in it?
Ooh. So Among the Living is being shown around Hollywood at the moment. There's no bites yet. I think that'd make a good movie. But I wrote a novel called The Hunt 10 years ago now. It's one of only two novels I've written that aren't sort of horror or fantastical. It's a straight thriller.
Yeah.
It's based on me. It's sort of right about what you know. It's virtually an Iron Man being shot at, being hunted through the Welsh countryside. So his family's been kidnapped, and he's the victim of a human hunt. So rich people pay lots of money to be able to hunt and kill a human. So his family's kidnapped, and he's told, you've got to run. If you're captured and they kill you, your family goes free. If you escape, we kill them. So it's like this awful dilemma.
Yeah.
A third party comes into the mix who's already escaped this group, and her family's been wiped out, so she's back for revenge. And So The Hunt almost became a movie at the same time as The Silence was happening, and then it all fell apart, which happens. And then a couple of years later, it was optioned for a TV series for 2 years, and then nothing happened there. And I've since written my own spec script based on it.
Yeah.
Which is also doing the rounds at the moment. I think it would make a great, really great sort of smaller budget action film.
Yeah.
The sort of stuff that you see popping up on Netflix all the time, you know. Yeah. And who's starring it? Oh, do you know... So when I wrote it 10 years ago, I sent a copy to Matthew McConaughey because I knew he's done triathlon and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd be really good as the main guy.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think, yeah. Yeah. As for Rose, the other character, Zoe Saldana would be great. Not sure. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, okay.
Keeping my fingers permanently crossed.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing with screenplays. I've got a friend who's got a screenplay possibly being made soon. He wrote it 30 years ago. Once you've written it and it's out there, it's always available for someone to sort of pick up again at some point.
Yeah, it could happen.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to finish up now, so thank you very much for your time. I said there's been very, very different styles. I know sort of Frank is on the Lottery Winners, but the Lottery Winners are far more sort of indie pop than Frank possibly is and everything. And then Skunk Anansie, as you say, with theirs. Idols are the band that they're an amazing live band. I mean, do you get to see live music quite a bit? Is that something, one of your passions?
It is. So my wife and I have seen Idols in July in Cardiff Castle.
Right.
Can't wait. I saw Frank's band, The Sleeping Souls. They've done an album, a solo album. I saw them live in Bristol a few weeks ago, and Matt Nazir, their keyboard player, he was at the merch table, and I meant to chat to him, and he said, oh, nice t-shirt. I had my Idols t-shirt on. And they just done a festival with him in Hong Kong, and he said they get the crowd going.
They really, really do. I saw them at Latitude years ago. But yeah, I interviewed Ben and Tarrant from Sleeping Cells.
Oh, did you? Right?
I used to be into Dive and Nigel Powell's early bands, so that was quite
really?
Nice. Right. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Idols. Sort of seeing them in July. But what made you choose this as your final track in today?
Well, Danny Nedelko. It's such a powerful song about, you know, we're all equal, we're all the same, you know. And I love the fact that, I mean, it's punk anyway, but the people. I got friends that listened to them and said, oh, that must be nasty, hardcore music. I said, no, it's really morally pure music. It's wonderful. Yeah. You know, the message in this song, we all need to live by. And also, they're just such a... And Joe Talbot is from my local town, Newport, apparently. He was born in Newport, yeah. I got friends that have known him from a young age. So I hope to meet him one day. It would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait to see him live. It's not my wife's sort of music at all, but she loves him because we've seen him on TV at Glastonbury. Yeah. And she said, my God, they're so passionate on stage. Yeah.
It's a hell of a performance. You'll have an amazing time.
Can't wait.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time. This is Idols.
Go.
My blood brother.
did a lot of talking as well, but sue me. It's what I do. It's why I'm here. Thank you to Tim for his time and his great choices of songs there. Right, not long left before the night shift, so let's play you a few more songs.
In the mirror, so many people standing there. I walk towards them into the floodlight. I heard no echo, there was distortion everywhere. Standing there, found my transcendence. It played in mono, painted blue. You were the Pyro, I was the dark room. I'm the shining light in your.
Narcissist, taken from their latest album, The Ballad of Darren. Damon Albarn on the stage at Coachella basically said that could probably be the end of Blur. That's probably the last concert they'll ever play, was what he suggested. Who knows? What we do know is there's a documentary and a concert film around their Wembley Stadium gigs in 2023 being released in the coming 12 months. I was at Wembley. I'm looking forward to seeing that concert video without a shadow of a doubt. Okay, this has been Bumper to Bumper here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Gareth Williams, a trawl through Indian alternative from the 60s onwards, well, from the 70s onwards tonight. Hope you enjoyed tonight's show. We're going to finish off with a bit of the Kaiser Chiefs. I'll see you next week.
Across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM News.